to the Governance and City Council Committee meeting of April the 18th, 2018. Mayor Nuremberg.
Here.
Councilmember Trevino. Councilmember Villagran.
Here.
Councilmember Saldana.
Here.
And Councilmember Sandoval.
Here.
Mayor, we do have a quorum.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to our city. Good afternoon. Welcome to our city council governance committee meeting. Time is 12:11 p.m. We have just two items on the agenda in addition to approval of the city council governance committee meeting minutes, which we'll take up now. That is March 21st and April 4th.
Motion to approve.
Second.
There's a motion and a second for approval of the meeting minutes from the 21st and April 1st, or April 4th, of the Governance Committee. Any comments, questions, changes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item number two.
Item number two is deliberation and action regarding the appointment to the pre-K or SA Board of Director members whose term end on May 31st, 2018. For City Council appointments, districts 4, 6, and 8, and the appointment of new members for the City District 2 and 10 board seats. And this is going to be presented by Peter Zanoni and Sarah Beret.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the Governance Committee. I'm Peter Zanoni, Deputy City Manager of the City. I'm accompanied today by Dr. Sarah Beret, our CEO for the program, Pre-K SA. And in the room are most of the board appointments that we'll be talking to you about this afternoon. This is the first item on your agenda that does consider pre-K board appointments for districts 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. Just as a reminder before we begin into the candidate credentials, pre-K for SA is a city initiative funded primarily by 1/8 cent sales tax that voters approved in November of 2012. We're in our fifth year. And the $47 million annual program serves 2,000 students in our four education centers located in each quadrant of the city. Each of our 100 classrooms is staffed with a master teacher and accredited teacher assistant who have their background and experience in early childhood education. In addition to those 2,000 students that we serve, our dollars are also used to serve 4,500 additional pre-K students through our competitive grants program. That totals about $4.2 million annually. We've partnered with private, charter, and this year for the first time, charter schools in the grants program. And the purpose of the grants program is to increase not only capacity in their systems, but also quality. And then additionally, pre-K is not just focused on educating the child, but also improving teachers across the community. And we have a very robust professional learning program for teachers throughout the city. Last school year, we provided training to over 1,900 teachers outside of our system. For the fourth consecutive year, and as part of the original blueprint of the program, an independent program evaluation has been done, and it shows that our pre-K for SA students enter our program well below their peers at the national level. However, by the time they've done our program, they exceed their peers nationally. So they start below, but they far exceed in the areas of cognitive thinking, literacy, and mathematic domains. The pre-K Board of Directors is why we're here today. It is comprised of 11 members. Each council member appoints one member, and the mayor appoints a member as well, who serves as the chair, a person on the board. The board members serve two-year terms. Three of today's nominees are reappointments, and two are brand new appointments made by the council members. Specifically, the reappointments for Councilman Saldana, Brockhouse, and Pelias are Richard Perez, who's here, Dr. Tracy Hurley, who's here, and Dr. Sherry Albright, who could not make it today. The new appointments for Councilman Cruz, Shaw, and Perry include Brandon Logan, who's here this afternoon, and Jennifer Laster for Councilman Perry. Our staff is supportive, and we have worked with every council member, or the five council members, in these appointments today. The Governance Committee's recommendations today will be forwarded to the full City Council. We have a spot on the agenda for May 10th to confirm these appointments. And you were provided biographies of each of the five applicants today, but let me just highlight a couple of their credentials for you. So beginning in District 2 for Brandon Logan, who would be a new appointment, Brandon is the president and chairman of Urban Capital Partners. It's a corporation with a focus of improving people's lives and the communities they live in on the city's east side. And one aspect of his work, Brandon is working at eight of SAISD's elementary schools, influencing over 450 youth. That does include Ball Elementary School in District 3. His corporation provides education, family support, leadership, and health mentoring for these students. Brandon has served or currently is serving as a member on various boards and organizations, including the Alamo the Senatorial Chamber of Commerce, the Alamo City Black Chamber of Commerce. Today he sits on the Harvey E. Najum Family Foundation Board. He's a member and is missing his Rotary Club meeting right now. He's also on a KLRN board as well.
Wow.
Brandon has a bachelor's of applied science in business administration and management from Grambling State University. The appointment for District 4 is Richard Perez. Richard is the CEO of the Greater Chamber of Commerce. He formerly served as City Council of District Number 4 and Special Assistant to the Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Housing and Urban Development. Richard has a master's degree in public administration from the University of Kansas. Dr. Tracy Hurley, who was recently appointed and will be reappointed again with this appointment, has a PhD in business, a master's in business, as well as her undergraduate degree is in business administration, all from the University of Houston. Currently, Dr. Hurley serves as the Dean of the College of Business at Texas A&M University, San Antonio. She has over 20 years' experience in higher education, and she also served on the SA 2020 Education Task Force as a representative of Texas A&M University. And then District 8's appointment, Dr. Sherry Albright, who could not make it today, but she is the Noreen R. Munchinson Distinguished Professor Award recipient. She is currently the chair of the Department of Education at Trinity University, and she has served in other capacities as well. She was a fellow at the Kellogg National Leadership Program, principal at International School of Americas, director for special projects at NEISD as well. She did obtain her doctorate in educational leadership from Columbia University, and some or many of you may be aware that she will be taking on a new role this August as the lead person at Raise Your Hand Texas Foundation. This organization works to improve education throughout the state of Texas. And then finally, Jennifer Laster, the District 10 appointment, would fill this vacancy in the board. Jennifer, good afternoon. Jennifer is the brand content manager at Whataburger Restaurants. She previously served as a reporter for the San Antonio Express News and handled public relations and communications at the University of the Incarnate Word, as well as at Texas Lutheran University. She has several recognitions, including the Fellowship for the National Endowment for the Arts of Journalism and Women in Communications Award in Writing and Publication. Jennifer has a Bachelor's of Arts from Texas Lutheran University. These terms of the five appointees would serve mayor and members of the governance would begin on June 1 of this year, and the 2 years they would term out on May 31, 2020. And finally, the board of directors will continue to be comprised of both business leaders and professionals in education. Our founding board had a 50-50 split, both in business leader and education professional. With today's five appointments, the makeup would be five business leaders and six education professionals, so that's pretty consistent with our original board. In terms of male-female diversity, there would be seven females on this board today with these appointments, and four male candidates, or four male board members, I should say. Mayor, that concludes my presentation, and in summary, staff does recommend that the Governance Committee approve forwarding these nominations for Districts 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10 to the City Council on May 10.
All right. Thank you, Peter. All right. And just to clarify process, we are going to make a recommendation to full council, and then full council will ratify. Since these aren't competitive interviews, I'd like to propose that each of the candidates come and just give a brief introduction. If there's any questions from the committee, we can ask them at that time. I don't think there's any need to leave the room or anything, so there's no suspense here. So, how about we start? Yeah, go ahead.
Can we also ask questions of
Too? Sure, absolutely.
Afterwards.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do the interviews first, and then we'll just open it up for questions. Why don't we do that? Since all three of you are here, maybe you have just 1 minute or 2 minutes, just introduce yourself, and then we'll just ask questions of the group. And that includes Sarah. How's that
start
work?
With Brandon. Start with Brandon.
Start by district.
Yeah,
right. Oh, I see.
Brandon,
that was a good move.
District.
Good afternoon, Mayor Newberg, members of council. My name is Brandon Logan, proud native of San Antonio. Really honored to be here today. 10 years ago, I made a firm commitment about what I want to be in life and how I want to contribute to San Antonio's vibrant economy. And it came down to my three areas of passion, which was youth, underserved, and education. And today really represents a milestone in the event that I am selected to move forward of a culmination of the work we've done over the last 10 years, specifically in the inner city of District 2 and District 3. I'm very fortunate to represent diversity. I think that diversity is smart. Diversity brings strength, and it also creates a greater environment for us to continue to grow in a sustainable manner. And today, as an African-American male, millennial at that, I think that I would represent something much unique, in a sense, from pre-K for SA. And one thing that was not mentioned is that I proudly served as the MLK chairman, and what we focused on was really elevating the brand and also furthering the investment level in education. So taking from 40,000 to 400,000 in a short period of time really signifies the work that we've done collectively to bring people in an inclusive manner. So happy to entertain any questions anyone may have, but really honored to be here today.
Thank you very much, Brandon. So why don't we go now to Tracy?
Richard, it would be Richard D4 if we're going in district.
Oh, Richard's here too. I'm sorry.
Well,
we have the new appointments and then the reappointments. So go and do that.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is Richard Fettis. I'm the CEO of the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, and I'm honored to be asked to continue to serve on this board. I'm one of the founding members of the board, and I would like to applaud you for your continued commitment to this program. You heard already that it is indeed moving the needle in a positive way, and I'm proud to be a part of that and proud to continue to do it. I think this is a model that the rest of the world needs to know about, not only the United States, but the rest of the world. And we continue to do it right. Sarah's doing a fantastic job, and your city staff also, to support all the things we're doing, and I'm just happy to continue to do it.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me here today. It's an honor to be considered for the board or a reappointment. I am the dean of the College of Business, and I think I'm a firm believer in education. Of course, higher education is near and dear to my heart, but the first step to higher education is excellent pre-K, and I think it's a very important component of the economic development of the city. So I have 20 years of experience in higher education, and I firmly believe in the concept of pre-K, and I'm very impressed with the progress that the board has made and the staff of pre-K for SA. It's very impressive. I've only been on the board for 4 months or so since November, but very impressed in how it runs and the goals they're achieving and how it sets the stage for the teachers.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Tracy.
Sherry Albright.
Sherry's not here, I don't think.
Yeah.
Jennifer.
I'm here.
Good.
Take charge. And I just want to say I feel horribly undereducated after listening to everybody's resume run through there. But I'm so proud and honored to be considered for this and to have an opportunity to contribute in some small way. I'm a native San Antonian, left a few times, have come back. That's where my heart is. Raising my family here, I've been a resident of my district for 11 years now, so my mortgage is halfway. And I have 3 children. I serve on the PTA board as well. Education is something that's very close to my heart. My youngest is a 4-year-old, so I am intimately familiar with the great fun of pre-K and all of the great work that it does and what an impact it has. So I'm excited, again, and honored to be considered for an opportunity to have a voice in that and help shape the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'll go ahead and start. I don't really have any questions for you all. I just want to say thank you for taking on this challenge. The board has not really changed a whole lot. You know, Richard's been there from the start. We've had our staff who's been incredibly supportive and standing up this organization when I think people didn't really think it could be done, but it's performed quite well. So thank you for taking on the challenge of continuing this. Obviously, the next term for pre-K for SA is particularly challenging and important for us to continue to show the results, especially as the cohort that's about to pass through third grade gets measured and subsequent cohorts get measured for their reading, reading capabilities. And obviously also as the public begins to scrutinize it again as we get towards a renewal, which we all hope can happen. So thank you for taking that on, Sarah. You're doing a fantastic job. I have heard no criticism or complaints. In fact, ones that have lingered for a long time have been addressed by you and your staff. So thank you for the work that you're doing. Keep doing it. And turn it over to my colleagues. Councilwoman Vidrum, sorry.
Thank you. Thank you all for stepping up to want to serve. Thank you for continuing to serve. Peter, good work, and Cheryl, very good work setting this up. And also, we have to give credit to you, Councilman Saldana, and the work that you've done in making sure that this was on the ballot and making sure that you were advocating for this moving forward. I did have, I guess it's not so much questions as in thoughts of the connections that we need to look at with our pre-K for SA and where we are as a city right now, too, and the links and the connections between early childhood and four-year-olds, the 0 to 3, and making sure that as we, with pre-K, we get them at 4 and then we move on, but that 0 to 3, and making sure that we are being intentional and deliberate when we're talking about what about those younger brothers, those younger sisters, and those other family members. Just if we're working on that, that we continue it and we're making more intentional movements forward when we're looking at our pre-K and that early childhood education. So that would be my charge and thoughts to you all as you all work together as a board of directors with our Pre-K for SA and the team of Pre-K for SA. And as Sarah, just one quick question. How do you, with employee evaluations or the teacher evaluations and seeing how they're feeling about things going on at Pre-K for SA, how do you record that?
So we have ongoing. I want to say one thing about the birth of
yes.
three.
Mm-hmm.
Just yesterday we had community leaders from the birth to three or birth to four groups out talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
How do we leverage the resources that we have to make sure that we are
mm-hmm.
Addressing both the needs of the teachers
mm-hmm.
and the directors in there, and made
yeah.
some came up with some great strategies around that, and connecting what we're doing at Pre-K for SA there. So I think that's a really important piece,
mm-hmm.
and figuring out how to make sure that the resources in the community are aligned, because
mm-hmm.
we have lots of different folks who are working, making sure that we're all working together.
Yeah.
So in terms of what the staff is doing, we will do a staff survey, which we do to find out, but we also have, I have a teacher leader group that I meet with on a regular basis to both talk with about issues, but really talk around curriculum and how we're moving forward on the work and making clear what it is that we need to do. I went out and I've met with every at every center earlier this in January
mm-hmm.
to talk about what's going on, what is happening in terms of changes that we've had over the last couple of years, and then to listen to what their concerns are and address some of those concerns. So a lot of it was around when concerns came up, it was misinformation
mm-hmm.
and misunderstanding about why things were being done the way they were being done. And some of it is that we had, when we stood up the centers, there were 4 centers that were connected but not exactly aligned with everything. And so now we've really tried to align on a system. And so for some people, that was a change. And so making sure that people were really clear about that.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And yes, thank you for the work that you all are doing with Voices for Children and
yeah.
working with the 0 to 3 and building that up. I think that's extremely important. It's part of the whole ecosystem.
Absolutely.
So thank
yeah.
you very much. I appreciate it. And it's always a joy going.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, you're always
to have
them.
The kids
yes.
there telling you how much they love you.
Yes.
It's great.
I always tell people, if you're having a bad day, come to Pre-K for SA.
That's right.
You go into our classroom, you will believe the world is right and we're all going to be
yes.
okay.
Yes, thank
yeah,
you.
Really
thank you, Mayor.
So nice.
Thank you, Councilwoman Vidrum.
I'm ready to make a motion to accept the new appointees and our reappointments.
Second.
There's a motion and a second for approval of item number 2, which is to forward the recommendations to the full council. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you all again. We'll see you on the other side. All right. Second item is an update on a review and recommendations for agency agreement.
Committee members, thank you for this opportunity. And really, I just want to come to this and provide a briefing on really what's been going on with me and Andy's and our department's review of really looking at best practices in our relationships that we have with our nonprofit entities that we support, as well as the LGCs, the local government corporations, and other nonprofits that were specifically created by the city for a variety of purposes, but very specific purposes for each one. And so just kind of some input and some just an update on what we've been doing since we last met with this group in January. Regarding one thing that we had discussed going, talking about was going to the ERB and discussing this the proposal or the prospect of including our LGCs within the jurisdiction of the ERB and therefore our ethics code. We had a great discussion with them, a lot of questions with some answers. But really, it comes down to what the LGCs, of what their governing documents call for, as far as their relationship with the city and then therefore their relationship with the ERB. One thing that I will say, with all boards and commissions that are created by the city, those members that are appointed by council as individuals are subject to the ethics code already. So that would be inclusive of the LGCs that they are appointed by this body, the city council. As individuals, they're subject to the ERB because they're subject to the ethics code. However, that does not apply to the entire entity or that organization. So the goal is to really continue to review those entities to determine how to move them under that jurisdiction or if that would be the best for the given entity. I think last meeting we discussed that, and Andy had proposed, you know, as we create new ones, that's certainly a consideration, but also going back to the existing ones and see when it makes sense or if it makes sense to do that. So that work is ongoing.
We'll add that since our office is always heavily involved in the creation of LGCs from a documentation standpoint, we'll add that to the consideration list, as Kevin said, in terms of as we look at the purpose and what that LGC is there for, we'll consider and review whether to what extent the ERB jurisdiction should come over not only those appointed by the council, but other members as well, and to the entire entity.
The next topic that we then addressed and with input from this council is getting the nonprofits involved in this discussion, as opposed to just dictating them new rules or whatever we may come up with. And we did this through the by creating a survey and sending a survey out. The survey had questions right to ethics policies or integrity type policies, also training, and what levels of training was already ongoing within their organizations. And then we also addressed a specific topic of background checks. We sent this survey to 58 entities, primarily our delegate agencies. Our response rate was just over 50%. So a good sampling or good representation. And the survey results were actually encouraging when I looked at them. For those responding, we found that 97% of these nonprofits already have policies related to ethics and integrity, fiscal responsibility, and privacy. And 90% have policies related to procurement, specifically with conflict of interest and fair solicitation processes. 100% of these entities have policies related to sexual harassment. So from a policy perspective, the vast majority have policies in place. These policies apply to both the board members, the staff, and volunteers, when they had volunteers in a third of these entities. The rest of the entities, it was the board and staff who these policies were applicable to, again, because some don't use volunteers, and it's just depending on the makeup of that.
The survey will be helpful for us. As we last time we spoke to this committee, we talked about calibrating our contract provisions that provide for some of these policies so that we're not too burdensome on the delegated agencies, but at the same time create some of the protections that we were asked to look at. And so far, as Kevin said from the survey, it looks like some of the provisions we talked about adding will not be as burdensome, particularly to a lot of the large organizations. Obviously, we'll continue to calibrate as we get direct feedback as we roll this out to the LGCs. There's a meeting, for example, on Thursday. But it'll help guide us in terms of making sure that we're not imposing too much of an obligation on these organizations.
And then actual training, because something we discussed at the last meeting was training provided to the board members. And we found that 80% of these nonprofits already provide some type of training to their board members. Now, that training could be one-on-one, meaning the CEO or the executive director of the organization will sit down with the new board member and explain their responsibilities and you know, just an overview. Some have training provided in-house, but just more of a group setting. And there were a couple of agencies that actually had consultants come in to provide training to their board members. One thing we don't know yet is the depth of the training that's provided through these various mechanisms. And we asked about the cost of the training, because most of it is provided in-house. They really didn't know what the cost was, other than the cost was the time that it would take them to provide the training. Then we asked some very specific questions about background checks. Really, do they provide background checks? What type of background checks? And who are they applied on? And almost all the entities that responded already performed some type of background checks for their staff. The level of background checks varied, but the trend that we kind of found was the larger organizations tended to provide more in-depth background checks, and those that dealt with their constituency of children and elderly also provided a little bit more detailed and in-depth background checks. And by in-depth, I mean, you can do the basic background check on the internet for $10.95 or whatever, but when I say more in-depth, they go to criminal background checks, drug screening, sex offender registries, checking driving records. A few required a fingerprint background check. And one agency also runs credit checks on their executive team and those involved in finance. So some of them are doing a great job with the background check area.
And this is what we're going to have to be careful, carefully look at what the purpose of the organization is and what services they're delivering. For example, we identified a couple organizations whose fundamental purpose is to provide opportunities and second chances for people who may have criminal history. So obviously, as we look at that organization and the services they're providing to the city, we're going to have to be careful about how we apply any requirement to have background checks. But again, we're going to focus on those where either they're handling a lot of money or they're dealing with vulnerable populations in terms of being more vigorous in terms of what the requirements would be.
And then we also asked just an open-ended question at the end of the survey, what are the concerns that they may have as it relates to the topics that we presented? About a third of them did express a concern that if there was additional training requirements, they would then be concerned with the cost of that additional training, if that were to become a requirement. Interestingly, nobody brought up the cost of background checks, which was something we were concerned that they may bring up. And my personal opinion, I think, because most are already doing background checks, that's already a cost they have, and it's just part of their business plan. So there were no concerns brought up about that. So, you know, the sum of the survey process that we used, I think it was some encouraging results that these agencies are thinking about policies, procedures, as it relates to their entity and for their own protection in some of these cases. You know, as I mentioned, the depth of the training that they're getting, we still really weren't sure about. And I think really, again, the goal is to look at best practices and really come alongside these entities and working with them. So I think providing that opportunity for more awareness or the training capabilities, and we looked, when I say we, the city attorney's office and also the finance department, if we were to develop a training program, what is it that we really want the board members to be aware of as they get into a new role? And some of the topics, you know, what their true responsibilities and duties are of a board member, a governance discussion, and then management oversight as it relates to finance, basic financial concepts, ethics, transparency, also HR policies, really as it relates to the hiring process, and therefore that would include discussions on background checks, at least that they're considering them, depending on their specific situation. You know, while this year is a discussion, just to tell you where we've been, to get feedback, and one area that we're leaning toward is to provide training or make training available to the nonprofits, and one option would be to require at least one person from that organization to attend this training that the city, we could provide. A lot of this training that we're talking about, it's stuff that we already have in place within various city departments. It's just a matter of bringing that together. and ask them that at least one person from each entity attend that training, then take that training back, or be able to acknowledge that they have already provided that training. Again, to cover the basics and just, you know, that high-level responsibility and accountability.
The good news are the basics, the content of the basics can be delivered relatively easily. There's a lot of resources out there that already cover fiduciary duty of board members, fiscal responsibility. So the content would be relatively easy to put together. And as Kevin said, then the goal would be to make sure that either we train the trainer, they go back and train the organization, or they represent to us that the content, as we delivered, is content that's already provided to their board members, or we go out there and actually, you know, help them, you know, train their board members. Again, a lot will depend on the sophistication, how large the organization is.
Yeah, with the goal of really, you know, recognizing this is a partnership between the city and these nonprofits to provide that service, and really being able to come alongside them and provide that training wherever we can. Again, we're continuing, again, as I mentioned earlier, to look at the LGCs and categorize those and see where we need to go with that. And another big part of Andy's group that we're looking at is the contract with our nonprofits, making sure that the right clauses are in there for the protection, the liability, protection of the city. But also, as they're going through that process, they're trying to streamline those contracts and make them, to the extent possible, easier to read. I mean, if it's a small nonprofit, they may not need the 60-page template or whatever it is, and that may be too big, but it's a lot. But really, I said customizing that contract so that it meets the needs of both the city and the protections the city needs, but also spells out the requirements and the expectations of the nonprofit. So that it's not an overburdensome process for them.
And as we work through the LG, I'm sorry, as we work through the delegated agency process, we'll be delivering our initial revamp of the contract, get feedback, and it'll be an iterative process as we get feedback from them and as we try to calibrate it in terms of larger organizations versus smaller organizations.
Right, and as we're in the middle of that two-year cycle with the WAC, we've both been working also with DHS. They're the ones that actually sent out the survey for us, since they have the relationship and contact with these entities, just to, you know, to hopefully help our response rates. A lot's been going on, a lot more to continue, but again, with the goal of establishing that partnership and making that relationship just an easier relationship and with expectations set from both sides. So that's really all that we've got, but certainly available. Any questions or comments that you have?
All right. Thank you, Kevin. Andy, I'm cognizant just quickly of the fact that, you know, when we make a process overbearing or complicated, and we're inviting mistakes to be made that are often, you know, unintentional but can be serious. So when I initiated the request, this was meant to be a self-assessment, really, about our contract provisions and what we're requiring of nonprofits, but in particular, the focus on those LGCs, the city-created agencies that have agency and funding provided by the city. And so when you say best practices, I'm interested in what provisions can we include in the contract to ensure that we don't have or that we have ultimate confidence from the public when we're right, when we're providing that funding of that agency. With regard to the training, or actually let me ask you, on the survey, what was the response rate for the
53%.
Survey?
53%. It was 31 out of the 58.
And those were, so those were, that was a selected sample of the nonprofits, or who was?
Oh, no, we sent it to all the delegated agencies.
Yes.
Oh, that were under contract.
Right. Currently have contracts with
them. Okay, why didn't the others send it back?
Oh, we don't know. I mean, there was about a week and a half, 2 week timeline. We want to continue to reach out to them and see if it was just to get to it, or because we certainly want their input also.
Yeah, I mean, and that is another question I have, is to what extent have we and will we engage the nonprofit community to make sure that this is not seen as an onerous process. It's a self-course correction in many ways, but we want this to be good for everybody.
Exactly. Actually, this is step one, Mayor, in terms of the outreach to them, in terms of the written survey back.
Yeah.
I suspect we'll get a lot more input as we meet with them. I mean, our first meeting with them is Thursday, and we'll continue to solicit their input. I think there's various meetings throughout the way,
yeah,
which eventually evolve into one-on-one negotiations. So as we get more into that process, we probably will get more feedback.
Yeah. And I heard from a number of the nonprofits that the training that we've been talking about is something that a lot of them do.
Right.
And they do it through other agencies like the Area Foundation. I'm less interested in making every single agency come down to City Hall than I am ensuring that they're receiving adequate training if it's available. And so I would be more in favor of us requiring a certified training.
Right,
as opposed to requiring the city's training.
And then that's, yeah.
If we could work through the Area Foundation or something.
And we could certainly do that, just the acknowledgement that they have received the training.
Okay, and I totally agree with the approach of depending on what area of business they're in would require different levels of checks. That's, that makes sense. So back to the LGCs. I think it's extremely important that when we create an entity, that we make it subject to the ERB. And if we didn't do that within the governance initially, we need to figure out ways we can go back and do that.
One of the things we talked about last time, Mayor, was we're going to look at it, because there are different times when some of these organizations need to change their organizing documents. And so whenever that opportunity presents itself, we'll take that opportunity to look at the ERB jurisdiction as
okay.
well. So what I'm saying is we may not necessarily have to wait too long, because there are things that come up where they adjust their rules of engagement, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so we'll take those opportunities to see when we can interject in the ERB jurisdiction.
Right. And we're going through a process to look at how we can strengthen, perhaps even simplify, the ethics review process. That's also a charter conversation. So in my mind, I want to know, is this something that can be done on our end as it relates to the ERB and our charter language, as opposed to something we'd have to go back to every single one of the nonprofits? Because, and here's my logic, when a city council member or a mayor is appointed to another board, whether it's city funded or not, they remain a city council member and a mayor as in the purposes of ethics. So they will be subject, regardless of the agency, if it's created by the city or not, to the city's ethics code. I think because the city would have a hand in creating an entity, it should remain that way as well, whether the entity is in XYZ business, whether it's city funded, or regardless of that. So, just my thoughts. Sure.
Just a question. Is your intent that we work with all the nonprofits, not just the social service delegate agencies, but all the nonprofits that have contracts with the city, because the delegate agency group is just some of those.
Small.
There are a lot of other organizations.
As it relates to the...
this issue.
The ERB issue. What I'm suggesting is that when the city creates its governing
like
documents.
Like Hemisphere,
right.
As an LGC.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. It would be under the purview of the ethics code of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm hearing is that depends based on the governing documents that were
It depends
originally
on the
governing
documents, and as I said, Mayor, sometimes the bylaws need to be changed for other reasons.
Yeah.
So as they come up for either review or specific change, we will use those opportunities.
Yeah.
Look at ERB jurisdiction.
But as far as background checks and that, you did your survey, but we have nonprofits throughout the... Yeah, there's over a couple hundred,
right.
So the intent is to talk with all of them.
Through this training requirement.
Yes, okay. I just want to make sure we were following your intent or the intent of the governance committee. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like it or not, for better or for worse, when the city creates something through an ordinance, if something happens, it's going to come back to the city. I mean, we birthed the organization, it's sensible. Councilman Vigran.
Thank you. I think you were hitting on a lot of the questions that I had, too. And talking about training, in the survey, did you define what you meant by training, or they interpreted it whichever way?
We asked specific training on policies and other board training. So we didn't get into a lot of detail. We didn't want to at this because we wanted to keep it simple.
And I think there is that balance between the nimbleness, the flexibility, and then the being onerous or what have you. So I'm glad y'all are going in that direction. And I think where the mayor was going to with your ideas of, you know, the ethics review board, who would be, you know, subject to that, et cetera. But when we're talking about this, then we mean all of the local governments, like the Alamo and all of these nonprofits and other groups that we partner with as a city and give money to, correct? Is that what we're thinking?
Well, I hope I'm not being too simple about this, but I would say that if the city, if through city council ordinance we create an organization, it ought to be subject to the ERB.
Right. For those that are created, there's our list right now is 27 of them right now that includes right now. So yeah, subject to ERB. Now the training that we're talking about would be nonprofits, all nonprofits,
sure,
which the city has a contract with.
Mm-hmm. Can I also get a list of all the 27?
Yes, yes.
Groups. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilwoman Begun. Councilwoman Sandoval.
You also answered some of the questions I had with the mayor's and the councilwoman's questions, but so there are 58 nonprofits that receive funding through the delegate agency
currently
process?
There's 58, yes, through the current delegate agency process.
And then once we start including other agencies that we do some sort of business with, including real estate leases, that grows to...
Not, if we look at nonprofits, we had identified at one point, I want to say the number was 273,
yes,
plus
right,
or minus.
Yes, over 250.
Nonprofit organizations, the delegates, there's who gave you the arts agencies, there's probably close to 100 of just those because those are much smaller contracts. So that takes a big...
But we're just talking about nonprofits.
Nonprofits, yeah.
So if we're leasing space from a private owner that's a for-profit entity, that's not
that's
included
right
in the 273.
Yeah.
No,
you're
right. I was listening to your...
You're right. I phrased it incorrectly. There are nonprofits that receive some funding from us in the arts process, but with whom we also lease property. So we have property that
okay,
we have a lease agreement with them. So are those agencies also going to be considered?
If they're a nonprofit agency, they're in the 273.
They're counted in our numbers. I mean, that's really just a legal discussion. If it's strictly a real estate transaction,
sometimes the lease is part of an overall contract we have with them, Council. And in fact, the arts ones are the ones probably they'll have the most difficulty with, because there's a wide range in terms of the size of the organization. Frankly, some are rather national organizations, and then sometimes we have contracts with an artist. So it's going to be one where the calibration is going to be more of a challenge.
Okay, so it's to be determined.
And if you have some specific examples, let us take a look at those. Maybe we can talk with you after the meeting and then follow up on those so
sure,
we can get our arms around that too.
Yeah, I just want to know if there will be additional requirements on some of these agencies. So in my district, we have the Jefferson Woodlawn Lake Community Development Corporation, and they do lease the DECO building from the city. So I think it would be important for them to know if they can expect to be, you know, to have additional requirements placed on them. Thank you.
One last question for clarification. So do all of these 27 that you were talking about and our nonprofit organizations, do they also have to do a financial disclosure form like our board and commission members do?
That's also a case by case.
Okay.
Because it depends on whether they're under the jurisdiction of the ERB or whether they fall under our ethics code.
Uh-huh.
But as the mayor said, the work will be to try to get them all eventually subject to that.
Let's do the 30th. Okay. Yeah, that was my question, if that's something that we're going to see and look and open for discussion, even with all of the local government corporations.
Yeah.
So that's a good question. Yeah.
Maybe to ask the groups that as well. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah. Thank you, Councilman Legrand. And again, I mean, I think if we're doing this correctly, we make it easier for people to abide by the intent of the ethics code, not harder. Okay. Any other questions? So this is just for briefing, and you're going to come back to us as there's more information?
As there's more information, as some of this gets finalized.
Okay.
You know, just my thoughts of what I'm hearing now, we're all about.
Yeah.
Again, your point of focus on LGCs.
Yeah.
We get that.
Probably before, I would suggest, Mayor, probably before we finish out the delegated agency process, because as I said, I think we'll have some really good feed dragons to start some
right.
more substantive engagement with those agencies.
And then, you know, best practices hopefully to help inform the RFP process. If there's anything that is implicating the charter, though, we do want that informing the commission. So for them to discuss, because ethics reform is one of their charges.
Right.
Okay.
Since Kim and I both work with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you, guys. Anything else?
Yeah.
The committee?
Thank you.
All right. That's all of our business for today, and we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.